Kia ora, welcome to the Power Up Podcast, powered by Te Puna Umanga, Venture Taranaki, and produced by Raw Collective. This podcast highlights and celebrates Taranaki business owners doing awesome things across the region. We talk to trailblazing founders and entrepreneurs to get the inside word of their journeys. It's a glimpse into the reality of success stories, where people talk about their wins, challenges, and how living in Taranaki shapes their work and lifestyle. I'm David Downs, and this is the latest in a series all about exceptional Taranaki businesses and thriving Taranaki people. Nau mai, haere mai, we welcome you to hear all about our enterprising story like no other. Abby Packer is the founder of Neat NZ, an online business selling affordable, holistic, natural products, including perfume, skincare, superfoods, supplements, and lifestyle products. Abby started Neat after burning out in her corporate job. It started in the spare room at her house and is now sending out more than 3,200 orders a month from a dedicated warehouse. Some are products Neat develops itself, and others are from brands they love and trust. Abby has a very high standard for sustainability. Just about all of her products are suitable for vegans, and Neat supports causes such as Trees That Count and Taranaki Kiwi Trust. She talks about how the business started almost by accident, how she got it up and running in the early days, and the realities of running a booming online store in the health and beauty space. Well, kia ora and welcome.
Kia ora. Nice to be here.
Where have you come from today?
The office out the other side of the valley, but New Plymouth, obviously.
New Plymouth, very good. And tell us about Neat. You know, we're going to learn a lot about it, but I heard you started it by accident. Is that right?
Yeah, well, so what happened was I'd left a corporate job. I was in business management in the engineering industry, and a bit burnt out, so decided to just leave and set up my own small business, helping other small businesses with their marketing, Facebook and things like that. And I purchased a Kickstarter type thing that was a laser cutter, and it was going to be delivered in like the next 8 weeks. So I was like, cool, leaving my job. This is going to arrive. I'm going to be home and hose.
Nice.
And then the thing was delayed.
Uh-oh.
And then it was delayed. And then it was delayed. And I was sitting at home thinking, okay, well, this was what I'd sort of base my whole future business off. I was going to do sort of bespoke laser cutting things. In the meantime, because I wasn't working really, I was just building up, Mum was looking for a natural perfume and she hadn't been able to find something that she liked.
Yeah.
So I just said, well, I've got nothing to do. I'll make you
wow.
one.
Have you made perfume before?
No, never.
Good on you.
I had some essential oils at home. I had some things and I just thought, I've got nothing else to do right now. And so that's what I did. Yeah. And I made a couple of perfumes. And the sixth formula that I came up with, I shared with a few people and they were like, this is really something. This
nice.
Is really something.
So you Google something and you go, oh, I've got to pop down the chemist and get some iron.
Yeah, oh, there's some great New Zealand suppliers for that sort of stuff. So you can actually start from very small batches and things like that.
Yeah.
Quite easily in New Zealand.
Is your mum still using, I'm jumping ahead, is your mum still using the product that you gave her?
She never liked any of them. And she only started wearing our fragrance a couple of years ago. She had, up to that point, she was getting me to make something that we never sold. So I had to make her this special fragrance all the time that I was like, this is not one I want to market. It's like nothing. So, yeah.
Come on,
she's
Mum.
Finally on board with the ones that I actually make and sell now. So she's
good. Good to have a harsh critic in the family, a friendly critic.
Yeah.
Good on you. But at least she gave you the impetus to get started. But I also heard your husband, Jason, he was also supportive on this whole idea.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, right from the get-go, even leaving my job, he sort of had said to me, if you want to leave, you can. So right from the jump. And then when it came to just constantly, you know, pivoting into this, he was supportive, even though he thought I was a bit crazy. Like, you don't know what you're doing. Like, what are you up to?
You're sitting there with YouTube open
like,
and some chemicals. And wow. Well, that's good though. But I mean, that's the leap of faith that sometimes you've got to take, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just tell us about how you move from, you know, looking at stuff on the internet and making a couple of test things for your mum to having a proper business. Like, what was that step of the journey like?
I just literally set up a website and put two perfumes on there and started selling them.
Wow.
And then I set up a social media page and I started talking about these two perfumes online.
Yeah.
And that was that. And then it just snowballed from there. And then I added another perfume. And then I added a skincare product and another skincare product. And just kept going.
And how did you find out what your customers wanted? In another episode, we talked to someone about market research and the importance of understanding customers and things like that. How did you know who was the buyer for your product? He or she, what do they want?
In all honesty, a lot of the customer are me or my mum. Like what we're looking for is what a lot of people are looking for. So I could draw on that sort of as well. When I'm developing products, that's what I'm looking at. Is first and foremost, it was products to solve my own problems or the problems of people around me. And then realizing that those are the problems of many people.
Yeah, that's great then. Yeah. You had that empathy. And then the website sales thing, did that work well for you in terms of that as a channel?
Yeah, definitely. I built our first 3 websites, I think, and then let my listener was like, I've got to really start getting someone else who knows what they're doing to do this.
Yeah.
So, you know, you sort of just get to that point where you've got to take the next leap and start outsourcing the odd thing. But up to a certain point, it was just all me constant. You know, I did the branding, I did our labels, I did all the design, everything.
Wow. That's awesome. Nice. And you started with a really clear commitment to sustainability, from what I understand. And you planted trees, you supported the Taranaki Kiwi Trust.
Yep.
You've got a family history of being involved in these sort of things, haven't you?
Yeah, those are some things that I've been able to do a little bit later. But even right in the early stages, we knew that we wanted to obviously use natural ingredients and make sure that we did the right things with our materials and stuff like that. So, you know, the girls this morning have just been out to the recycling centre and to the junction, and they take all of our big containers and they get reused by people. So we try to get things reused before we, you know, recycle or dump them.
Mm. Oh, good on you. Why is that important to you?
Well, I don't know. I just think it should be important to everybody. You know, you should care about the place that you live and the earth that you inhabit.
Yeah. And what did you have to do, though? I mean, there's often a compromise between wanting to do the right thing in sustainable and green and actually as a business having to invest, therefore, in different types of packaging.
And even just the lessons around it. Like, I set up my business with glass packaging to learn years later that glass is actually the least environmentally friendly packaging that you could use, because of when you look at the whole life cycle of a product, from how glass is made to the weight of it when it's transported and all of those things, it actually becomes less sustainable than plastic. Even if you set that plastic on fire, it would actually be more environmentally friendly than using glass.
I think that would surprise a lot of people.
And it surprised me, but once you've gone down a path, it's kind of really tricky to unpick it all. And so we've had like a recycling analysis done and a packaging analysis done by someone, and they've given us information around ways that, you know, it's almost like there's no perfect solution. So you've got to pick and choose, you know, what fits your customers and what fits you as a business. So so we've ended up sticking with glass, but we're looking at some LDPE sort of refill packaging so that they can keep the glass at home and then keep reusing it.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes more sustainable, is when you keep reusing glass over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's not sustainable to use it once or twice, you know. So learning all of that, you know, you think you're doing the right thing, but you just don't know what
you're doing. And you've got to feel your way. But again, there's an investment in early stages of a business in particular in doing the right thing.
Yeah. And when you're just one person and figuring it all out on your own at that stage, because we bootstrapped and just started at home, that there was no team or, you know.
Yeah. And the brand, you said you did the brand as well. And I love the brand. I'm a big fan of brands. And neat is a very cool, it's a neat word. But yeah, tell us about that. Where did that name come from? How did you think about it?
I sat down and I just brainstormed all of the things that the brand meant to me. And, you know, it came down to things that are unadulterated, pure, cool, and, you know, all of the things that neat means in pretty much every way that you can think of the word.
Yeah, nice. And you did, have you done marketing? You've done marketing and stuff in your past?
Yeah, I actually have an art degree, and then I have gone on to other marketing roles and things throughout my 20-odd year career, but yeah, just little bits of everything, I suppose.
That's cool. That's fun. And in those early days when you started to see sales coming through the online portal, like, tell us about that. What did that feel like?
We used to love it. We used to have the Shopify cha-ching. Like,
it
would go off all the time.
On your phone or whatever.
Yeah. And then it got to a point where that was just too much. And we were like, wow. You know, like, to get it to the point where the cha-ching is happening too often.
I'm getting sick of the cha-ching noise. It means I'm making too
intense.
Much money.
Yeah. And we used to write every single sale in a book that we had. And we did that for quite a few years, and I've still got those books, and we used to write every single sale for each day. So you'd see some days you might have like just 3 or 4 sales, and then another day you might have written 30 sales.
Wow.
But then again, it got to the point where it just became impossible because I'd just spend all day filling out this book of how many sales we got. And it's like those little things that we had to let go of. It got quite sad. Like I used to handwrite notes to every single customer.
Oh.
And when that got, my thumbs would be, I'd write 120 in a day and I'd be writing furiously. And then my hands would just be so sore. And I was like, so then I got to the point where I'd print a sticker, but so I could still put their name in it and print it and then put their name in it. So it was still personalized. And you just had to let go of those little personal touches eventually because it was just growing so much.
But they're lovely things to do at the beginning stages of a business, aren't they?
They are, but they're incredibly hard to scale sometimes when,
Where did they come from? Were they local Taranaki or was it just anywhere?
No, all over the place, really. Yeah, social media is a great thing for that. You can get out and about all across the world, really, but New Zealand in particular.
That's awesome. And when did you know you were really onto something? Like it's gone from being a kind of a cottage industry business at home to being, actually, this is a serious business.
I was probably a good 3 years in when I was like, do I really want to do this? Is this, because that was when it was getting to the point where I was like, right, I'm going to have to either start thinking about moving it out of home at some point, you know, because it's just going to keep growing. So it was probably year three that I decided, okay, I'm definitely going to keep going forward with it.
Yeah.
But I think it wasn't until it was probably in year five when it really started getting serious and, you know, we had to look at the workshop and I'm like, okay, I'm starting to build this little factory or something.
Whoa.
What's happening here?
It's getting pretty serious now.
Yeah.
And I heard that you also exceeded your annual projections by more than $500,000 at one point.
Oh, yeah, that was in like 2023 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, every single year we've just blown it out of the water and it's insane to us, really.
It's brilliant, though.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds like, you know, when you tell these stories in retrospect, it always sounds like, oh, it's great, it started here and now it's amazing and we've done these cool things. But there must have been some difficult times along the way.
Oh, every day.
Yeah? Tell us a few.
I mean, every week there's a challenge, you know, like just before Christmas, one of our main labelling machines broke down. And our other labelling machine needed to be occupied because we were furiously making stock. You know, these are quite expensive pieces of equipment. They come from Australia so you're dealing with challenges like that, or a supplier goes out of stock of one of our core bottles and it's right now peak season and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? So this sort of stuff happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Other entrepreneurs need to hear this.
It's
cathartic for them to hear. It's not just me.
And when I went to, when I was talking at one of the schools last year, I said, you know, if you don't like learning, don't start a business because you will be forever learning. You will never stop learning. You know, like it's just constant challenges that keep you having to learn something new because you didn't know that was going to come up, you know.
What about people? Without naming people, but obviously as you grow, you need people around you to help you do things. And suddenly now you're not just running a product business, you're actually managing a team and dealing with all of the fragile and weirdness that people bring to a business sometimes. Have there been challenges along the way in terms of how you lead?
We've got an amazing team. We're really, really lucky with our team. And they've all been handpicked and they fit really well within the rest of the team.
Yep.
But we do use a lot of external support. So we outsource our HR and our health and safety as well as obviously do some internally. But we use an external social media manager and, you know, I have an advertising agency that I work with.
Nice.
So, there's a lot of external support. As much as there's six of us in the workshop doing the work day to day, there's definitely a lot more people that are supporting us.
So
the accountant, the lawyer, you know, trademark lawyers, all that sort of stuff.
So you as the CEO, you're thinking about lots of things at lots of levels all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, good fun. And the thing about it is you started kind of literally almost at your kitchen table by the sound of it, and then you moved into a warehouse and then a bigger warehouse, you know, like, tell us about those stages of growth that you went through.
Oh, we crack up. This video popped up on my TikTok memories the other day and it was me 3 years ago. So it was just before we moved to our first workshop and I was at one of the benches in our front room of our house with literally a kitchen whiz making a batch of serum. And so it just showed me how small 3 years ago, how small the batches were and how you know, how much it has grown so fast in 3 years.
So you're not using kitchen whizzes anymore?
No, we use bigger whizzes.
But the warehousing thing's interesting, eh? Because that means you're having to build a lot of stock, you've got working capital tied up, you know, there's a lot of money that's sort of sitting waiting to be sold.
Definitely a lot.
Yeah. So how have you managed the kind of cash flow needs for growing a business like yours?
We've been incredibly lucky that it's self-funded, and it's just always had good cash flow. It's had good profitability. We've never had to borrow money from anyone or take a loan from the bank or an overdraft. And I think initially in the first few years, because I make that sound very like, oh, la-di-da, but I didn't take a wage for 5 years, and I bootstrapped it hard those first 5 years, you know. So there were sacrifices that I made in the beginning so that I could make sure it had that positive cash flow at some point while we were building it up. So, but it came down to a really hairy point at one time, because when Jason left Fonterra, he cashed out his super, and we lived on that for a year while we tried to build the business.
Literally sort of taking out your future and betting it on the present. Wow.
Yeah, and we were down to our last $3,000, and I was like, man, this has to fly. Like, we got 1 month of income left, and we were living lean. Like, you've got no idea how lean we were living.
Noodles, instant noodles
for
lunch.
So lean. Like, we just, everything was a no. And, you know, if Jason wanted something, it was like, cool, what are you selling to do to get that? You know, sell the kayak if you want golf clubs or whatever, but something had to be sold to buy something. Yeah, so not taking a wage. I think more people need to be a bit humble and, you know, ride those sacrifices when you're in those early years. You're not going to have a flash car and even a wage particularly, you know. I didn't have a wage for years. And, yeah, I was lucky that Jason was working and we made it work. So if you're on your own, it's maybe a different story. But,
That's amazing, though, to fight, you know, be that close to the wire, but betting it all on the business and investing it all back in.
Yeah, well, and when we got that, to that point, that was when we threw it all into the advertising. We were like, this has just got to go. And I was lucky that I had come across a Google ad for my advertising agency. And, yeah, the rest is history.
Wow. How many hours a week were you working?
Oh, man. I'd be up at 6 a.m. Replying to emails and stuff, and I'd still be doing stuff at 9.
Yeah.
And
not a.m., p.m.
Yeah. And that was the problem, is it just infiltrated every aspect of my existence that it became quite unhealthy there for
did
a while.
Did it? Yeah. Tell us about that. How did you realise that?
Well, I felt like I was losing my mind for a while there, but in 2021 I was actually diagnosed with anxiety, and I think that had a lot to do with it, because I was every touch point for the business. So if someone had a complaint, it was me. If someone had, you know, every single thing just felt like it was coming at me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was quite relentless. Yeah. You know, it was like I was stock management, I was inventory, I was making stuff. I was just
press, whatever.
Yeah.
How did you break that cycle? What happened to get you out of that feeling of anxiety?
That was when I asked my husband to come into the business and help. So it didn't make sense for us to pay someone outside of our unit to come and work for us, because we weren't even paying ourselves. So I was like, can you please come and help me?
Yeah.
You know, and we can start, you know, maybe trying to take a little bit of wage. So we might pay ourselves like $500 a week for the both of us or something.
And
get
an extra pot noodles for lunch next time.
Yeah.
And so Jason sounds like that's been amazing to take a risk like that, leaving a secure job.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely.
Yeah. But what was that like? And also, coming into work for his wife, I was going to say.
Oh, what a nightmare,
clearly you're the boss.
Right?
Clearly you're the boss.
Someone has to be, I mean.
I mean,
it was good timing for him, because I think 13, 14 years of night shift had really, you know, those swing shifts had taken its toll. So it was timely for him. It was just, we complement each other well, because what I suck at, he's good at, and what he's not great at, I'm picking up. So
good.
I think it works well.
But it wouldn't have been an easy decision for him. No. For both of you.
No, and I think it's something that kind of just eventually happened, and then you get to the point and you're like, oh, okay, and we never really planned to work together, be together 24/7, like, you know. But you just find ways of managing it, and it has had its challenges, absolutely, because you can't not take the work home sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's at times we might be having we go home for lunch, but we might spend most of that lunchtime sitting there talking about work before we get back, because we might not have had a chance that morning to actually see each other, because I'm in a different room and he's out there, and he might have seen stuff with the staff or, you know, been dealing with things with orders, you know. It's just...
So would you say it's good for your relationship? Has it been good in the long run? Was it created problems?
No, I think it's definitely strengthened us and helped us figure out who we are as well. It's definitely helped us both grow,
Yeah. Would you recommend it to other couples to go into business together? Or are there certain secrets that you need? You have to certain boundaries that you have to set?
Yeah, I think there are certain boundaries you do have to set. You know, like we have things like we go to work around 7 sometimes, but on some days we're like a little bit more loose if we've, you know, got less on or just not feeling it, we'll go in by 8. Yeah. But we always try and make sure we've got a cutoff time as well, unless we've agreed it or talked about it, like, hey, I'm going to work late for this reason, or, you know, because for us it can just go on and on and on.
Do you carpool together?
Yeah, most of the time.
How do you decide who's going to cook dinner when you get home?
It's really just a team thing. Like, you know, he'll take it one night and then I'll do it the next. Or depends on what we've got going on. Like, like last night I was still working quite late at the kitchen counter, so he sorted it out because I was still a bit busy. But,
nice.
You know, yeah.
And are you able to carve out time for you in your relationship as a couple without, you know, so you go on holiday, go on a date night, whatever, that is nothing to do with work?
Or we are now.
You are now.
So that's only been recent. So August 2023, we went for 2 weeks to Canada. That was our first holiday in years. We didn't even have a honeymoon. So then last year, August 2024, we got 2 weeks in America. And then just the weekend just gone, we took 4 days up north. So
great.
It's nice now that we have the staff and everybody knows what they're doing. And we do feel like we can step away and not think about it.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So you've made it out the other side.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to have a tough performance discussion with your husband about stuff at work?
Yes.
Cool. Tell us about that.
No, there's always things like if it's system things and, you know, and something's not right in the system. I'm really... particular about how things are. Yeah. Like, things have to be done right. You can't do no dodgy workarounds.
Right. Don't write it in the book. I told
Put
you to write
it in the system properly.
It's good. Oh, good on you. Oh, it's nice to hear, though, that that's worked out for you both. And it's the risk that you've taken. If you're looking back now, do you think the risk and the sacrifices that you made have been worth it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. For a multitude of reasons beyond being free from working for other people, but it's helped us become a bit more financially free. Yeah, it's given us opportunities that we wouldn't have probably had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where to next? Where's Neat
Who
going
knows?
Next?
Yeah, I mean, there's always something on the go. We've got fragrances, lots of new fragrances that we'd like to launch and refill packaging and things like that
cool.
the horizon.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Neat and the products that you've got, because, you know, some people might not know them too much. How many products have you got now? How many sort of different SKUs?
Oh, man, like 80? No, it's more than that.
Wow.
We've got our core product group, but then because we have fragrance variants, that's 50 of everything, or 55 of everything, because we've got 55 different fragrances.
Holy moly.
So so we can do 55 spray fragrances, there's 55 roller fragrances, there's 55 sample fragrances.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of SKUs. But
and is it all relatively small batch type stuff, or do you make in volume?
No, we're still making relatively small batch sizes,
Here? Do you make them in Taranaki?
Yeah. Yeah, we sure do.
And packaging and everything?
Yeah,
and
we do
them
it
from
all.
Here?
Yeah, yeah. The only ones we don't make are obviously our supplements. Those are made by a manufacturer down in Christchurch.
Yeah. And you partner with other businesses, I understand, too. You know, how do you find and work with other people, other organisations?
As in the ones that we're selling, Ethique and Aotearoa. They were just ones like Breanne West, the founder of Ethique. She set her business up not maybe a year or so before me.
Yeah.
And so she was someone who was sort of, even though hers is now like well up there.
She's very well known
in comparison.
Now. Yeah.
But yeah, and at the time, she actually got one of my fragrances and she made a shampoo bar using Little Petal as the scent for one of her shampoo bars or conditioner bars. Yeah. So we sort of collaborated back then. But I just liked having those complementary products from like-minded businesses that I didn't want to make myself. I don't want to make deodorant and I don't want to make shampoo and conditioner.
Yeah.
But people may want to purchase those when they're purchasing the rest of their skincare and stuff. So they felt like a natural fit.
Yeah. Mm. Nice. And I've heard in particular, you know, you've got some products that are, that seem to have great efficacy as well. Here's one, Magnesium Plus Pain Relief Spray.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Tell us about that.
That stuff is pure magic.
What does it do? Yeah.
Well, it helps with all sorts of things because magnesium is something that helps our entire nervous system. Yeah. So it can help people with sleep or it can help people with pain recovery, muscles, joints and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's quite incredible that a lot of people, you know, they might be lacking in sleep and they'll use that and then all of a sudden they're just getting a deeper sleep. Could just be the missing piece of the puzzle for some people.
How do you create a product like that? Like, what's your process for you to think about, all right, I need to create something with a magnesium spray?
Oh, well, at the time of developing that, I was actually a part-time fitness instructor. And so I was doing high-intensity interval training multiple times a week. And so the in-between time, there wasn't a lot of recovery.
Right.
And I found my muscles getting a lot tighter and tighter. And so that was something that...
You needed it for yourself. Again, yeah, exactly. Testing it on yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, nice one. Mm. And the other thing about you that I've noticed is your social media. Like you mentioned earlier, you built your own first couple of websites, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it's clearly a secret to your success is how you've managed to leverage, you know, Insta and TikTok and whatever.
Mm.
How important are they for the business?
Critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't be where we are without it. It's absolutely been the critical piece for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what sort of effort did, like, tell us how you use those tools.
Oh, man, it's a huge effort. Like, the constant feeding the beast of content is relentless. But it is a great channel to speak to customers. It's a really good place to connect with people. I personally am not on Instagram or Facebook. I like TikTok. So I generate all of our content using TikTok.
Yep.
And then I sort of push it out for the others to put into our Instagram and our Facebook and things like that. And
Yeah. How did you learn all that? Just hours of being on the tools.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
And
I honestly, I don't use it anywhere near to its full potential. I barely skim the surface, you know. It's like one of those things you could do much better if you really learned it.
Do you do any influencer type marketing? Get any sort of paid influencer type things going
on? No, it's a funny one. It's never really worked for us and I've never enjoyed it. So it's not something we do. We've had a dabble in it every now and then because I'll see someone post something on Instagram that says, you must be using influencers. And I'll get that little like, should I? Is this what's going to help?
Yeah.
And then we do it and it flops. And I'm like, well, what a waste. And yeah, it just, I don't think it fits for our brand. It's just
because I was hoping to be...
Well, anyway, we can try it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly there for your
We've
target
got
demographic.
We're willing to try again.
You've got any hair regrowth sort of stuff you can give me? Have you got, I mean, one of the things clearly is that you're, as a woman running a business, as someone coming as a female-founded business, you've got different dynamics going on, particularly now you've got working in a business run by a couple. Have you got any advice for female founders that you think would be useful?
I mean, this is one of those things where I'm like, do as I say, not as I do, because I don't look after myself in the ways that I possibly should. But I guess it's just being a little bit gentler with yourself and not having such hard, high expectations for the way things should look.
Yeah, you strike me as someone who's got very high, like you said earlier about, you know, things need to be done right in particular. And therefore, you probably put yourself under a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure, yeah.
Are you better at dealing with that burnout thing now?
I think so, yeah. Ask my husband.
Funny you should say, because over here we know.
I think I'm better at, I've learnt now that it's a lot of it's self-inflicted. So,
right.
You know. The pressure comes from within.
Yeah.
And,
Have you also learnt to deal with imperfection a little better? Or are you still always targeting perfect?
No, I'm pretty comfortable now with understanding too that nothing is perfect. And everything, you know, you can't make everybody happy, you know?
Yeah.
So as long as you're doing a really good job at making the most of people happy, you're doing all right.
If you cast your mind forward 5 years from now, what would you hope for the business and for you?
I would love to see it have expanded into Australia and have a much wider customer base, especially for our flagship product, the shaving oil. I just want to see that in more and more and more hands. I'd love to see our team grow and, just help more and more people with their skin concerns or whatever concerns they have in terms of, you know, their sleep or recovery and things like that, you know. It feels good to make an impact in people's day-to-day life in that way. That's quite tangible to them.
And what about from their sustainability point of view? How do you think that? How do you think the future of consumer products like yours is going to go in the area of sustainability?
Yeah, I mean, it's already a big shift. The onus is on the manufacturers to make sure that products are made more sustainably. So it's just going to have to be something that is constantly looked at.
And
I mean, we do it now. Any new product I put out, that's actually the first thing that we look at.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And what about being here in Taranaki? What does this place do for your business? Is it harder to do business here or easier? Or what is it about the lifestyle that makes...
In some ways, it's a little bit harder because we have to freight a lot of things here that, say, the Aucklanders get just popped around the corner and it costs us a lot more. But and we also miss out on a lot of networking opportunities. There's a lot of big events that happen outside of in the main centres that, you know, we have to travel for. So there is a little bit of a premium that we have to pay if we want to participate in those things. You've got to pay for them, which can be challenging as a small business owner because I used to try and get to a lot of things that were happening around the country. But when you've got no money and you're trying to build a business, it can be a bit of a struggle. But then there's the benefit of being out of work and down the road and at the beach within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that would ever take me away from that.
Yeah. Beautiful place to be.
Yeah. Just the fact that you can be switched off and doing something completely different, you know, 15 minutes after you've left work.
And fantastic.
Yeah.
15 minutes after you've left work, I haven't even left the car park when I live in Auckland. So, final thing, what is the best and worst advice you've ever had for your business?
I'll start with worst advice. The worst advice I ever had was to buy a building. When we were looking at leaving at home and looking for our first workshop, one of our advisors told us that we should invest in a building. And if we had have done that, it would have sunk us. And not only that, when we actually went to move into the building, because that building that was getting built, the size of it, we would have already outgrown it before it was finished being built, because the one that we got our first lease on, we outgrew that within a year and it was 40 square metres bigger than the one that we were being advised to purchase. Yeah,
lucky.
So it was just one of those things where it's like you can have trusted advisors, but sometimes you can't trust what they're saying.
Yeah, just advice.
You've still got to make your own mind up and do your due diligence. So, and the best advice I've ever had, trust yourself, trust your gut.
Very good. Abby, it's been wonderful to talk to you. I hope that NEAT keeps going from strength to strength. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Kia ora.
Beautiful. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening, and a special thanks to Venture Taranaki for making this Power Up podcast possible. If you enjoyed this episode, there are plenty more like it. Check out the Power Up podcast home on whatever platform you're listening to. They're a great way for budding entrepreneurs to learn from the lessons of others. Speaking of people trying to build businesses, Venture Taranaki is a great place to go for free startup clinics, advisory support, business mentoring, masterclasses, investment support, and networking opportunities. If you want help bringing your idea to life, talk to Venture Taranaki today. And one more thing, if you've got this far and you've enjoyed the episode, please rate it, review it, or subscribe for more. It helps others find us.